ESPN 107.3 presents Wild at Heart, bringing outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond. Wild at Heart, powered by Cowtown USA, Colton Steakhouse and Grill, J. Cook Fly Rods, The Outdoor Superstore, Advanced Performance Shooting, Missouri Trappers Association, Trout and Sons, and Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. Now, Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome to Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3 FM in the pulse of the Ozarks, beautiful Rolla, Missouri. I'm your host, Tommy Bench. Jerry Cook is my co-host, and John Francis is our radio engineer. Welcome to Wild at Heart. We're red-blooded Americans who remember and cherish our outdoor heritage. We love America and support the Second Amendment. We stand for our national anthem and say please and thank you and open doors for the ladies. We hunt, fish, trap, shoot, float, camp, and explore in God's country, the Missouri Ozarks, right out your back door, and occasionally a few points beyond. Join us each Wednesday, 4 p.m., right here on ESPN 107.3, or catch us Sundays at 8 a.m. or anytime online at ESPN1073.com. Start off the show tonight, we've got Bass and Bob on the line, and talking about Lake of the Ozarks, and what's going on Lake of the Ozarks, Bob?
Oh, everything's great here at Lake of the Ozarks. The trees are turning colors. It's absolutely beautiful. A lot of the vacationers and big boats are gone. It's a great time to be out there fishing. The fish are biting like they should be. They're at least starting to here in the fall. So it's a lot of fun to be on Lake of the Ozarks right now, Tommy.
Well, I can't wait to get out there. Matter of fact, I think I'm going to go tomorrow. I thought about it anyway, but just talking about it's making me want to get out there already. What do you think on the fishing report? I know you just had your meeting last night. How's the fishing going? I know there's a big turnover that happened. The lake turned over here recently, but is it recovered from that already?
You know, Tommy, it's interesting. That's a great question. I think the school's still out on whether the lake is actually turned over or not turned over. The lake has a kind of a goofy, funky kind of color right now to it, which would indicate turnover. Mm-hmm. But the water temperature, because we just have not had just a sustained cold spell yet, the water temperature has remained in the low to mid-60s, which does not, you know, it's just not quite cold enough for turnover. But it does have that kind of feel. So I think the lake has turned over maybe in some areas, but it's still going to be turning over. But we're all waiting for that really good November fall bite. And you know what, Tommy? I'll tell you what, just today it started to happen.
It's starting to happen. That's great to hear. I love to hear that it's starting to happen, and that fall bite that everyone's looking for is starting to come alive. I know during the big bass bash, everyone's hoping for a topwater bite, and you know that fall pattern that just didn't quite happen, and so now it's finally coming about. Then,
for me anyway, and I'm after everybody, and I'm checking all these patterns all the time, just like you do down on the estimate. You know, these things change. Change continuously, and you have to stay after them, you know. But today I was out there. I had six keepers in about 6 hours, so not great. But caught some big ones. Caught a 4-pounder and a 3-pounder, and they were on those main lake big rocks, bluffy type of rocks, you know, bluff end. Just going down the main lake with wherever you've got the, you know, big chunky rocks. And today was good conditions. You know, it was overcast and a little bit of wind. I would have liked a little bit of more wind, but you can catch those fish. You have to kind of stick with it, but you can catch those fish on top water like a whopper flopper or a spinner bait. You can run down the main lake. There's current. They've been drawing water out of Truman, dumping water out of Truman and just running that right through Bagnell Dam, so there's current out there. And as you know, Tommy, that ignites the entire feed chain. And so as you're going down those banks, you'll come across a dock on the main lake, and you can throw a stick bait on the corner down the side of those main lake docks, and you can pretty predictably get bit doing that. May not be real big ones. You catch some Kentuckys, but I did catch a few good Kentuckys on that pattern today. So it's really starting to turn on like it should be in the fall here, Tommy.
Well, great. That's great news to hear. I love to hear that. And you know, I kind of skipped a little bit, but I'll backtrack a little bit and hit on it now. Let's get to know Bass and Bob a little bit on who you are and how you got introduced to what you become today. You know, as far as your bass fishing career or history, you know, I know that you've got a huge passion for it, and you're there at every big event. You know, you're always there with hot chocolate and hot dogs and coffee and all donuts. You know, I mean, you do so much tremendously for the sport of bass fishing on Lake of the Ozarks. And anyone that fishes Lake of the Ozarks that don't know who Bass and Bob is, they don't know Lake of the Ozarks. So let's get to know Bass and Bob a little bit. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how Bass and Bob actually become to be Bass and Bob.
Well, I appreciate that a lot, Tommy. And it's a pretty simple story. I'm born and raised in St. Louis, and I ran software companies in St. Louis for, you know, my career. And but I always, just like you, always very interested in fishing and the outdoors, and would come to Lake of the Ozarks maybe a few times a year, you know, years in the past, fishing some club tournaments and charity tournaments and things like that. And then I purchased a condo here at the lake about 10 or so years ago and fished, you know, just all the time. And after I sold my software company, I decided to move to the lake full-time. So I retired to the lake, but being a serial entrepreneur, so to speak, I thought, you know, I want to do some kind of business. So, you know, it's a business. And, however, at the same time, I love to fish, and I planned on fishing every day when I retired. And one of the things that I had noticed when I was coming here for club tournaments or even when I owned a condo before I retired is that there really was a lack of fishing reports for Lake of the Ozarks. You know, you get online and you find some reports, you know, some of the fishing guides, they try and, you know, get reports up. You know, what the bass are doing, what kind of baits. But, you know, a lot of times those were dated. I thought, well, you know, fish every day. So I thought I'd start a website and put my daily fishing reports up, you know, good, bad, or ugly. You know, they're honest reports. Some days I get my butt kicked. You know, I'm not a great, you know, I wouldn't consider myself a great fisherman or pro, but I'm out there every day and chasing them around. So I started BassandBob.com as a membership-based website. I got very fortunate to surround myself with some expert pros. Wayne Fitzpatrick, that owns Fitz Fishing here, Jack Utzon, who runs Jack Sky Service, and James Deere, who runs Cocky Gator Bait Company. They believed in the idea of the website and the concept and were willing to invest their time to provide their insight. And, you know, without them, it just wouldn't have worked. And since then, I mean, you know, we have a following of well over 10,000 members on the website that, you know, follow the daily fishing reports and the weekly bulk reports and the monthly expert videos. And that's how it got started. It's worked out well. And as far as the tournaments with the hot dogs and the you know, donuts and coffee, you know, that's just my kind of giving back to the fishermen. I mean, you know, just like any business, the fishermen are my customers, right?
Right.
So I want to make sure that I'm very visible to the customers, to my customers. I want to make sure I can serve them as well. And so that's just all part of the, you know, I guess, you know, the big picture of it all, and it makes for a great camaraderie. And I think, Tommy, one of the things that's been a byproduct of doing BassandBob.com is that I've been very, very pleased with, and I think a lot of people in the fishing community, like the years I've had been, is the camaraderie that's created. I mean, you know, you get together and you drink some coffee and you have some donuts before, you know, before I take off or have some hot dog you're waiting in, and everybody's kind of friendly and talking, and it gives everybody a chance to kind of gather and talk about their fishing, and it gives a lot of us, you know, average anglers the opportunity to shake hands with guys like Dion Hedden and Marcus Core and some of the greats. And so that's been the camaraderie has been a great byproduct of doing Bus and Bob.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and you definitely do a great job of making, you know, you at least give a face behind Bass and Bob because you're there at every event. You know, it's not like, I heard, you know, Bass and Bob, I get my information. They know who Bob Bultman is. They know who Bass and Bob is, and they know that you have a passion for it. Not only do you have a passion for it, but I know your son, Rob, he's in there and competitive, very competitive. You know, he's up there in the ranks every single tournament. So, obviously, he's learned something, you know. He's doing well. He's kind of got the same, you know, chip off the old block as far as the passion for bass fishing Lake of the Ozarks, for sure.
Well, I appreciate that a lot, Tommy. And, you know, it's been a benefit to me and my son, Robbie, that, you know, as a family, he decided in his life of Brady with his two children to actually move from St. Louis 5 years ago. To come and actually, you know, help me out with BassandBob.com. And, you know, just like me, he was just a basic average angler, but he's got a passion for it, and he listens to these experts, and he's done well, and he's really enjoying living at Lake of the Ozarks as well, and thanks all the time. And he's had some success, and I think a lot of people know him. And, you know, in addition to working with me, he's worked at Fish Fishing, and he's got a great personality and, you know, enjoys being around all the fishermen as well. So it's been a good benefit. And thank God he can catch them because, if it were up to me, I mean, my fishermen cook them legit, but I don't catch them all the time. So a lot of the guys out there looking those fishing reports, I'm eliminating a lot of water and a lot of bait for them, but Robbie goes out there and catches them.
Yeah, he sure does.
Great job.
Well, that's something, you know, we'll talk about. I got so much more to talk about. You know, I got Nathan here, too. We'll talk about this next segment. But we got to take a break. We got a break to take here, and we'll be right back with more of Bob Bultman, Bass and Bob. This segment of Wild to Hard is brought to you by J. Cook Fly Rods, Custom Fly Rods, plus everything you need for fly fishing located in downtown Salem. We'll be right back.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3 FM. This segment is brought to you by Cowtown USA, home of Can-Am ATVs and UTVs, located in Cuba, Missouri. We're talking with Bass and Bob on the show today. Thanks for staying with us, Bob.
You bet.
It's good to have you back.
Same here, Tommy. Appreciate it.
Well, let's, he's talking about the bass fishing and the transition from, you know, the fall pattern and how the lake was turning over or not turning over. What are some of the baits that the pros, you know, the guys, you know, the Jim Deals and Jack Uxes, what are they talking about how they're catching their bass right now on the lake?
Well, I'll tell you, it's really been quite interesting because as I know you have Nathan in there too, and he's a great fisherman, and it's been you really have to follow the bait fish. So there's been fish in the backs of creeks. And in the backs of creeks, they're catching those fish on anything from topwater baits to flipping creek baits and worms and jigs into in and around shallow docks, all the way to then going out to the main lake and catching the fish on topwater baits like the whopper popper, the buzz bait, the propagator buzz bait. And also, you know, off of, I've been catching some fish, and a lot of guys have been reporting Dennis Beerhorst and Roger Fitzpatrick in this last week's tournament, catching fish in 20 to 30 feet of water on 1 ounce jigs, with big rocks. So if you see a rocky bank or a patch of rock, you know, catching them like that. A couple weeks ago, Stacy King won the tournament here, and he was throwing basically what amounts to a topwater bait, very much like a spook. It's called a pencil popper. It's a very long kind of stick bait, topwater stick bait, that kind of thing, and you just work it really fast. So top-notch baits are producing very well, as well as, bottom baits like a jig or a shaky head worm.
Yeah, the stick baits that you were talking about, that's another thing. What, you know, some people, when you refer to a stick bait, are you talking specifically just about topwater? I know you are in this instance, but, like a jerk bait, for example, how would you, is that bite kind of on right now or no? Not quite cold enough yet?
It's not quite there yet, Tommy. However, as we mentioned earlier, is that When I'm fishing and, Jack and, I just talked to Jack a little while ago and we had the experts meeting last night and he's catching them the same way. When you working on main lake banks, like along main lake banks where you've got some ledges or big rocks, you're throwing a spinner bait or a whopper plopper, but you'll come across some docks or some wave breaks and you throw a stick bait along the sides of those, main lake docks, you could be in 60 feet of water, but that dock has got that foam, and those fish will just, they'll just suspend under that foam, and you throw a stick bait along the side of that dock or in the front of that dock or on the corners, especially the corners that might have some wind or some shade or the current hitting it, and work that stick bait not like you would in the wintertime where you just throw it out there and let it suspend and sink, but you work it real fast and real erratic, and you'll get bit. You will definitely get bit. Now, you might not catch a lot of really big fish, although you can, but you'll catch some, really quality Kentucky bass, but you will get some bites.
That's kind of the same way I've been doing it on the river, on the Gasconade. I've been throwing a jerk bait, jerking around just real quick and haven't been letting it sit. I don't let it sit for very long. Don't give a good chance to look at it. Just kind of that real erratic action, moving it real fast. And I've been catching them that way. So it's kind of sounds
good.
Like
it's a good pattern, Tom.
Yeah, it is.
And as you know, being the number one guide on the Gasconade River is that, you have, especially in the fall, you have to follow those fish every day.
Yeah,
they're going to change on you, and it's bait fish related. It's current related, which you probably know way more about that than I do, fishing on a river. But you just have to follow them every day.
And it changes, like you said. It changes from day to day. You can't just go back after day one and go fish day two with the exact same pattern, expect the same results. It's just not going to do. Yeah. It don't normally happen. You can start there, but, yeah, you're exactly right. You've got to figure them out.
Yeah. And, sunshine matters. So if you get sun, you really need to be fishing some shade this time of year. Or if you have sunshine, you need to be following the, wind. So if you got some good wind, even though it's sunshiny, those fish will, they'll set up and they'll bite, they'll bite topwater baits or they'll bite, something like a stick bait or spinner bait, something like that. If you get overcast days, they'll get a little bit tighter to the rocks, on the main lake, but it's pretty much right now, even though you can still catch them in the backs of creeks, and there's a lot of bait fish in the backs of creeks. My good buddy, Marcus Sikora, one of the best fishermen on this lake, he always likes to say, Bob, I want to be where they're going versus where they've been.
Right.
And so to speak, where they've been has been in the backs of creeks, around those bait fish, and you can still catch them there, but where they're going is to these, main lake banks, big rock, chunk rock banks and bluff ends and that type of thing. And it's not as though those fish, as you know, necessarily swim all the way from the back of a creek out to the front, to the main lake. But what they'll do is the main lake fish are a whole different group of fish. They sit out there. They live on the main lake. They suspend. They're hard to catch most of the time during the year until it gets this time of the year and the big gizzard shad start getting up on those big rocks on the main lake. And those fish that have been out there on the main lake all year long, they'll come in and they'll start hanging out and just sit, on those big rocks just waiting for a meal to come by. And they're fresh fish. They're usually pretty big. A lot of them are big. And boy, when they eat a whopper plopper or a buzz bait or spinner bait, they just choke it down, and it's that time of the year for that.
Well, that's a fun time to be too. I don't know anyone that doesn't like a topwater, a whopper plopper or anything like that. Don't you? Isn't there a winter challenge you have coming up, or did I miss that?
No, we do, Tommy. I appreciate your asking.
Yeah,
about
let's
that.
Hear. I want to hear about it. I'm pretty interested.
So we have a winter bass challenge. The genesis of that was when I first moved here. I met a lot of fishermen, and they had indicated that, you know, during the winter time, there's not a lot of tournaments. You know, a lot of tournaments in the fall and in the springtime, but not much going on in the winter. And so they said, boy, it'd be great if we had, you know, something, some kind of tournament in the winter. So I put the Winter Bass Challenge together, and our first tournament is December the 15th out of Alhanna Resort, which is at about the 8-mile marker. And we just really have a good time. So we have a 4-tournament season. The first one is the 15th, and then following up on December 22nd. And then the first Saturday in January, and then the last Saturday in January. And we crown a champion, so we just keep it simple. It's a total weight. You can fish, your total weight is based on your best 3 out of 4 tournaments. And basically what that means is you don't have to fish all 4 because, you know, people have things going on, and sometimes weather's a little inclement. We have guys that travel from Chicago, Iowa, Nebraska, you know, Bass and Bob members from all over the place that come and fish that tournament. We serve a really nice breakfast every morning of the tournament, and then we have a really nice, you know, some kind of dinner, like some pulled pork sandwiches or pork steaks or something like that for the weigh-in. We have a couple of unique payouts, which I'll share with you, because not everybody goes out and catches, you know, a quality, you know, 15-pound or 18-pound bag of fish during the tournament. So we have a payout, the lowest weight for 5 fish. So
that would be me. I got to get into that one.
No, Tommy, I'll tell you, it's interesting. I mean, we have guys that they know they're not going to win the tournament because they maybe have 4 or 5 fish, but they want to catch 5, and they'll actually dump 3-pounders so they can go catch a Kentucky and maybe get the lowest weight for 5. we have a payout for the biggest Kentucky because, you know, during the wintertime, you can catch some big Kentuckys.
What about smallmouth?
We haven't done that yet, but you know what? That's a good idea.
That's a great idea. Hey, you do that, and I'll get in it. I'll talk Jack.
Those smallmouth in the wintertime up in the river areas of Lake of the Ozarks, you can catch some pretty good ones.
Yeah, you
pretty
can.
Pretty good smallmouth, you know.
I've
sure.
seen it happen.
So that's our Winter Bass Challenge, and we invite everybody to come out. It's a good time. You know, I try and cater to what I call the, you know, average anglers or the just beginner tournament anglers. We have a lot of tournament anglers that never fished a tournament ever before in their life, but they'll come out to the tournament. A lot of guys, they just like, okay, well, what do we do about registration? How does this takeoff thing happen? How do you do a weigh-in? You know, just a lot of, you know, things that we as experienced tournament fishermen know, but some of these guys want to fish tournaments, but they just don't know all those details, and they're a little intimidated by it. So we make sure that we cater to those guys, make sure we help them along. They can call me anytime and answer any questions. And we have a lot of guys that fish that Winter Bass Challenge that have never fished a tournament ever before, and it's a lot of fun for them. And then they go on and fish other tournaments once they kind of have the general idea of what's going on.
Yeah, get them hooked on it. So, you know, go ahead and give us your information, Bob. We're winding down to our second segment here, but give our listeners your information on how they can get a hold of Bass and Bob and what the website to go to and to get the most up-to-date information on Lake of the Ozarks.
You bet. I appreciate that, Tommy. So it's pretty simple. It's www.bassingbob.com. That's BASSING.com. And anybody can always email me at bob@bassingbob.com. Again, BASSING.com.
BassingBob.com. Well, Bob, thanks so much for joining us. I'd love to have you back again on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. So full of information. And thanks again. It's been our pleasure to have you on the show.
Tommy, thank you so much. Thank you for what you do. I really appreciate everything that you do with your radio show. You do a great job, Tommy.
All right. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. I really do.
Thanks, buddy.
We'll talk to you soon. Coming up in segment 3, we'll be talking with Nathan Oliver with Nathan Oliver Fishing. You're listening to Wild at Heart. I'm Tommy Bench. We'll be right back.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart. Remember, you can always listen to Wild at Heart anytime you want at our website, ESPN1073.com. Just click programming and Wild at Heart. Joining us now, live in the studio, is Nathan Oliver. Welcome to the show, Nathan.
Thanks, Tommy.
So, let's talk about your... We won't talk about any big secrets because I know you've got some.
I don't have any.
The Ozarks. Let's talk about some of the things that everyone pretty much knows about and some good ways to catch fish this time of year on Lake of the Ozarks. You know, if you was to go and tomorrow and target bass on Lake of the Ozarks, where would be the first place you go? Not necessarily specific place, but, I mean, what's the kind of stuff you're going to target and what are you going to throw?
You know, Tommy, I fished a two-day buddy bass tournament last weekend, and we struggled. You know, we caught them shallow, caught them deep, mm-hmm. everywhere in between. There's no rhyme or reason. We fought turnover real bad with the lake turning over.
Yeah. So speaking of turnover, before I don't mean to interrupt you, but explain what a turnover is on the lake, because a lot of people don't completely understand what a turnover is.
In the summertime, your colder water is deeper,
right?
And whenever the lake turns over is when that cold water comes to top and the warmer water goes deep.
And what does that do to the fish? I mean, how does that affect them? It really screws them up.
It messes with them pretty bad. And the oxygen gets dispersed throughout the water column, and that's really what makes them, they don't really know what to do.
Mm-hmm. I know that's a big issue when you got a turnover like that. It really messes the fishing up. Not just the bass, but the crappie as well.
Every species,
yeah, every species. You know, it's just like you was talking about the cold water being on the bottom and the warm on the top, and you got your thermocline. You know, it's just like we had such a summer that come on so fast this year that you were hearing about spawning bass and down below Bagnell in like July and August.
Right, absolutely.
It's insane because it was drawing all that cold water off the bottom of the, you know, right there up above the dam.
Right.
So anyway, what would be your go-to baits? You know, we were just talking to Bass and Bob on the radio, and he was talking about the different tactics. You know, so show us some of the stuff you got here. We're going to show you guys some Nathan Oliver secrets here.
I mean, I'm a jig guy. The first thing I love to do is pick up this 1 ounce football head Omega, and I'd throw it out deep. I'd throw it in 25 to 30 foot of water. And work it pretty rapidly. You know, try to stroke it up and down.
That's what I was going to ask you. I know. So basically, when he's talking about stroking, he's talking about ripping it straight up and letting it fall. Is that
as
correct?
Quick as possible. Rip it up as hard as you can, let it fall, and try to get them to react to it.
And as soon as it hits the bottom, you're just doing it right again.
Yep. Don't let it sit on the bottom at all.
Give it a reaction bite.
Right. And so that's where I'd start, just because I like fishing offshore and deep. That's just something I've always liked to do. If that ain't going to work, then I'm going to go to the bank.
Right.
Okay, can I interject a question here?
Sure.
So how do you know when it hits the bottom?
Whenever it quit, you can watch your line and see it, or you can just tell by a feel of your rod. Mainly, you can watch your line as it's falling. You can watch it, and you'll just, whenever it's not taking any more line off your reel, you know it's at the bottom.
Okay.
And whenever you're working that jig, where this one here, when they eat it, they crush it. It's not like, well, maybe that was a bite, maybe it wasn't. Whenever they eat it, you know it's ate.
Yeah, they ain't.
I actually about a month ago, fished a big bass bash with my dad, and he had never thrown a 1 ounce jig off deep like that. And we got introduced to it, and we actually both caught dozens of keepers doing it. It was a lot of fun, and he'd never done anything like that before, so that was pretty interesting. But if the 1 ounce jig ain't working, especially in October, November, as of tomorrow, I'm going to go to the bank. I'm going to pick up this Alpha Shad buzz bait, and I put a little piece of plastic on the back here, try to get it to skip behind the cables. And that'd be my next go-to because I know the time of the year.
You know, that's the hardest thing. You know, speaking of that buzz bait, I make my own buzz baits, and I'm pretty proud of them too. I'm pretty proud of my buzz baits, but I'm impressed on that buzz bait. So you can let them know that. Well, I'll let them know too. But that's an awesome looking buzz bait.
So describe this for our listeners.
You want to know what a buzz bait is?
You to describe the one that Nathan's holding there.
Well, Nathan's he's got a unique buzz bait. But I mean, a buzz bait here. Let's show that. Well. A buzz bait basically is a wire form with a lead head, almost like a spinner bait head, with instead of it's just a buzz bait. I mean, I don't know how to explain it, Nathan. I mean, how would you explain a buzz bait? It's a topwater
bait
that churns the top of the water. And, you know, a lot of my clients, when I go fishing, I throw it, and I'm like, you got to throw a buzz bait. They'll ask, well, what the heck do they think that is? And years ago, I would tell them, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. But have you ever seen a baby duck go across the water trying to get – that's what they do. They sit there with their feet going across the top of the water. I'm not saying that's what they think it is, but there's a big bass eat baby ducks.
So
I promise you.
That big – shiny brass part looks to me like a windmill, you
gold
know.
Blade, yeah.
It's just got gold blades on it.
Is, right?
And actually, this one here has two universal blades, if you can see them.
And
they actually clap together to make a very unique. It's a one of a kind sound underneath the water with this specific buzz bait.
And that's what it's all about. When it comes to buzz baits, every company and every manufacturer out there has their own buzz bait. And they're all almost a carbon copy of the next one. The only thing they did is Strike King come out with some years ago where they drilled holes through them. So they had holes in them to turn to make a different sound. Or they'll crimp the rivet. They'll crimp the rivet to give it that squeaking sound. It's all about the sound. Giving them fish something different to hear up there. They already see the commotion. The commotion is pretty much the same anywhere, you know, for the most part. But they get a different sound, and it just intrigues them, I guess. Because it's the same with my buzzbait. My buzzbait's a counteracting blade. There's smaller blades. One goes clockwise. One goes counterclockwise. They're just pushing water against itself. It's like that. You know, and it slows it down. You can go a lot slower. It's almost like a whopper-plopper sound. And they just, whenever they're not biting a traditional buzzbait, they'll bite that one. And I guarantee that's the same way. I'd never seen that one before, and I'm pretty impressed by it. That's an awesome-looking buzzbait. But that's what it is. It's hard to think that fish would eat that. You know, the bass will eat anything that they can get their mouth. They can get in their mouth. That's just a fact.
Well, my suspicion would be is that it more or less annoys them, and you know they're aggressive anyway, and so they just go attack it to get it out of their turf, if you will.
Well, sometimes they will hit it with their mouth closed. They'll hit it, but I mean, when they hit it, when we're catching them, they're eating it. They're hitting it with intentions to eat it. You know, I
had some last week, and they actually came out of the water, went over top of it, and never touched it.
Mm-hmm.
Never once touched it.
Wow!
Literally, come out of the water over top of it. And
so last week. So speaking of which, guys, just to let everyone know, Nathan is you was fishing with
Jamie Aynard.
Yeah, Jamie. That's right. Him and Jamie, you guys finished third in that tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, that's a real good finish for Lake of the Ozarks. Lake of the Ozarks has some big turnouts for bass fishing, and there's the best of the best. You know, I've always said this, whether I'm sticking my foot in my mouth, I respect Kevin Van Dam and Mike Iaconelli and Greg Swindle and all of them BSS pros, but I guarantee you these guys right here on Lake of the Ozarks will go toe-to-toe with any of them guys. I know it's their home lake, but they know what they're doing, and it's a very competitive deal. And so was you catching them? You said you caught some on that buzzbait last week?
Yeah, our big fish was a little over 5 pound or 5.5.
Yeah.
And it actually came on this buzzbait.
On that buzzbait.
Yeah.
And then the rest of them were just kind of a mixed bag of some of these jigs. How do you know, speaking of jigs, what makes you decide on what jig you're going to throw? Probably on the depth, the structure, or what?
Yeah, and as far as color, if you look, these two are pretty much the same jig.
Yeah.
I throw green pumpkin or I throw black and blue. A lot of people get creative with colors. I keep it simple.
Yeah.
I don't really play with it. My trailers are pretty much the same. Green pumpkin. This got a little blue hue to it, or black and blue. I don't mix things up. I don't venture far from home.
That's good color. I like that. So black and blue and green pumpkin. Green pumpkin's a traditional color. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you can't go wrong with green pumpkin.
Absolutely not.
What about your swim baits you make here? Let's talk about these swim baits you make.
These are some swim baits, 6-inch swim baits. I make them at home. If they're pulling any kind of current, when the fish first move offshore in June, it's hard to beat a big swim bait. You can throw it on a 1-ounce head, get it down there, and just swim it back at a fairly rapid pace, and they will choke it.
So how do you make these, Nathan?
Well, funny you ask. It starts out, it was something I started about 10 years ago. It was just kind of something I was intrigued about, so I did a little research, got online, and ordered some stuff to start it, and I was actually making crappie jigs to start out with. And that was fun, and I still crappie fish, and I enjoy it.
So what he's holding here looks like a fish. It's
yeah,
gray.
It looks like a shad.
It looks like a small fish, gray on the top, white on the bottom. So can you describe the process of making this?
Yeah, it comes – you can buy plastic however you choose. Mine comes in a 55-gallon drum. You dump it in a cup, heat up in the microwave at 325 degrees. It gets to be clear in a consistency of like hot syrup. At that point, you add your dye, glitter, color, whatever. If you remember third grade art class in the color wheel, you're a step ahead.
There you go. There's the first start of making swim jigs or swim baits. Sorry.
And then from there, you just kind of pour it in a mold. And once it sets up, you p- peel it out, and there you are.
And you just buy the mold somewhere?
This one actually is what I made myself out of plaster.
Oh, okay.
So that's how it was designed. And after trial and error of about a dozen of them, I finally got this. And I like the way it swims in the water and everything else. And so I just kind of stuck with it.
Yeah, and I notice its tail isn't exactly straight. It's kind of offset to one side, it looks like.
Well,
it's a paddle tail. It's just the way that it's probably the way you're looking at it, because it's hard to go straight. But basically,
it makes the tail shake back and forth while you're pulling it.
Yeah. It's actually got a little roll to the body, too, whenever you bring it back in, kind of like a shad will or minnow.
Yeah, that's what you want. That's exactly what you want. So how many tournaments have you won fishing things that you made yourself? Because I pride myself on making my own stuff, too. There's very few things I don't make myself, and that's like jerk baits, crank baits, things like that. But soft plastics, my spinner baits, my buzz baits, my jigs, I make them all, and I pride myself. So go ahead.
There's a fair amount of them, Tommy. You know, I make a lot of trailers for my jigs, too. So, I mean, I don't make the jig, but I make the trailers.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you contribute that to that.
No, that's – so I think a trailer is a big factor on the fish biting or not.
Absolutely. You know, it depends on how much action you want, if you want it more subtle, or if you want,
yeah,
want to kick like
and
crazy.
If you don't believe that a trailer matters, take your trailer off and fish it that way, and then yeah, let me know how you do.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
That's kind of the way I look at that deal, because I had a guy one time that he's a buddy of mine, and he didn't know how to fish a jig. And I said, man, you got to throw one of these jigs. It's a big fish bait. And he said, let me have one. So I gave him one. I just took it for granted that he was going to put a trailer on it and had some. And he's throwing it out. I ain't getting bit. I looked at it. He didn't even have a trailer on it. No wonder why you're not getting bit. They just, I'm not saying they won't bite it, because I'm sure they will, but, you know, it definitely helps to have a crawl trailer on there of some sort.
Absolutely.
But, hey, you know, we're about out of time for this segment, but, man, just stick around. We're going to be talking with Nathan some more about Lake of the Ozarks bass fishing and maybe some crappie, and who knows? Who knows what will come up next? So we'll be right back after the break. More with Nathan Oliver. I'm Tommy Bench, and this is Wild at Heart. Stay tuned.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart, your source of information about what's going on out in the world of outdoor recreation in the Ozarks and points beyond. This segment of our show is brought to you by the Missouri Trappers Association, dedicated to preserving the heritage and skills of trapping. We're back with Nathan Oliver. Thanks for joining us, Nathan.
No problem, Tommy.
So we was talking about these swim baits you make and the soft plastics you make in general, and how many tournaments you win off these stuff. You know, not just that, but, you know, I'm the same way, and a lot of guys are. They like to make their own stuff. They like to make things their own, meaning like Marcus will put out his own brush, and I know, I'm sure there's a lot of guys that do.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't put out your own brush, then you're a little bit behind the competition there. But so what are some things that you would your first things you go to? You know, obviously a buzz bait's a seasonal thing. You probably wouldn't be throwing it in January, but
right.
You know, like right now, if you're going to go out, you were talking about that, you throw that big jig, and like the swim baits. I was going to ask about those. Is that something that you would throw any time of year? Just for example, and we won't get too in depth in that.
I would say May till November, depends on the water temperature.
Yeah.
You know, even April, I guess. I've caught some fish this April on a big swim bait.
Really?
Like, just like that, yeah.
So what makes you decide to throw that spinner bait right there over?
That water gets to be about 55 degrees.
Okay.
I'll pick up the spinner bait with a big willow.
Yeah.
And throw it on some bluff ends or some behind some docks or anywhere I can find some shad activity.
Okay. So you're looking for the shad. You find some shad, you find some bait, and then now it's game on. Now
absolutely.
That's all you're looking for. And once you do that, you know you can start throwing a spinner bait or jig or whatever it is, you know.
Right.
So on the spinner bait, there's so many guys that are, okay, how do you know to go with the big willow leaf, the chrome willow leaf on the back versus a gold or versus a Colorado? You don't know. I just
kind of pick up. I always like the willow. It gives off a lot of flash.
Yeah.
It doesn't give off as much vibration as a Colorado, but typically on Lake of the Ozarks in the fall and wintertime, you have clearer water, and I feel like less flash is better.
Less flash is better. So I hear a lot of guys, I hear some guys talk about throwing a gold blade when it's really cloudy or overcast. Is there anything to that you know of?
Yeah, I like to throw a gold blade when it's cloudy or even if the water is a little bit dingy.
Yeah, yep. And, okay, so you got a small Colorado blade and then a bigger number five, whatever that is, willow leaf on the back. What's the, you know, you may buy a Strike King that's got two willow leaves, a smaller one and then a bigger. I mean, how, like I said, is there any reason why you picked that pattern? Or
this is an Omega custom tackle, Tommy, and you can go to their website and you can order it however, whatever blade configuration you want.
You can almost customize it.
They will. They will custom build you a spinner bait with any two blades that you choose. I choose this. It's a pretty standard for most people with a spinner bait. I've had success with it, and I'm kind of one of the people, if I've had success, why mess with it?
Oh, I agree.
So I just kind of stick with this Colorado willow leaf tandem.
I like it. That looks good. So changing gears here, you know, if you use crappie fishing, what are you looking for right now with the lake conditions, what we just talked about with the turnover or whatnot? You know, how would you go tomorrow? If you're going to go tomorrow to crappie fish, where would you go?
About a month ago, I was catching them deep. When I say deep, 25 to 30 foot of water. Mm-hmm. I would try that, check that, because I think some fish are still out there. And then after that, I would probably go to the main lake and start shooting underneath some of them docks.
Okay. So shooting docks after you go to some deep brush piles, basically?
Yes, yes.
And then are the brush piles got to be specific? Because, I mean, what if there's brush underneath the docks? Do you think they're going to be deep down in the brush, or do you think they'll be right underneath the docks?
To be honest, I don't know. It kind of varies on every day's a little different. Yeah. It depends on the sunshine.
You could have caught 80 of them today, and it may be different tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree completely. So that's just, you know, that's the fun of fishing, though.
Absolutely.
That's the fun of fishing is you never can just guess exactly what they're going to be doing.
Okay, I got to ask you guys a question. So hold up that bait, that one you were just holding up.
Which one, the spinner bait?
That was the
with the blades here.
That one. Okay, so that one looks absolutely nothing to me like a fish. I mean, what we're holding is a stiff piece of wire, it looks like, with a big spoon on the front and a little spoon in the middle, and then this fluffy stuff on the back. I don't know what you call them. But it doesn't look, I mean, the others that look like a fish, you
I'll tell
can
you,
understand
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you can understand.
So why does that attract a fish?
Because, believe it or not, in the water column, this looks very much like a fish, because this thing is spinning. It's sitting there. Imagine this spinning. Like, I can't, you know, just imagine it's going like this,
right.
And you just got all this flash moving all this water.
Okay.
So now you got this going on with these blades, same thing with that, and then you got this profile that looks just like that, but going this way.
And bass also have lateral lines down the side of them, which detect vibration. When that blade, this blade's spinning, it gives off vibration. So that fish could be looking one way, and the bait coming the other way, but they can feel that vibration and make a turn on it to attack it.
Exactly. Just like, for example, how are you going to catch fish when the water's solid mud? They still eat, but they can't see it because they use their lateral lines and those vibrations. That's when the guys get them big Colorado blades out or night fishing. It's pitch black. You know, there's no moon. You know, it's pitch black. You can't see nothing underneath the water, but the fish can still hone in on that vibration of that blade turning or the swim bait with the paddle tail going. They hone in on that is what they do, and they eat it. You know, that's just what it is. But that's what that is. That's a spinner bait, and there's so many ways to catch bass anywhere, and you know, people have their preferences. I'm a big jig guy like Nathan is, so that'd be my first go-to thing would be to go throw a jig. But you know, that's nothing. You've got three different jigs there. Explain why you would use the one of the three, or why, you know, which one, when, and where.
This is a half ounce, and if I had to choose one jig to use the rest of my life, this is what it would be. You can fish deep with it. Mm-hmm. You'd struggle with it, but you could do it.
Yeah.
You can definitely fish shallow with it. It skips really well. It's got a great head design with a flat spot on the back. When it hits the water, it skips right across it really well. And it's just a good jig. It's got a good stout 5-aught hook in it.
That's
You're
important.
Not going to bend it.
Yeah.
It's got a good fiber guard, weed guard to go through brush. That's just the way it is.
So what's that going to look like to a fish?
A crawl.
A crawfish.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a crawl pattern right there. So, and that's, you know what? That's my number one thing to throw. Like in the river, if you can imitate a crawl, you're going to catch fish. Largemouth, smallmouth, anything, because they all eat them. You know, so you either got, in my opinion, you've either got bait fish, which could be shad, it could be bluegill, could be sunfish, could be crappie. Believe it or not, crappie you get ate by bass too.
Oh, yeah.
They all do. Anything that bass can fit in its mouth, it's going in. You're going to be dinner.
Well, so, let me ask you this. Obviously, that looks like a crawfish there, but it's not the color of a crawfish.
Well, there's so many species of crawfish.
Oh, I agree with that too.
There's a thousand of them.
But in fly fishing, we kind of go with the orangish colors and the grayish colors and so on that the trout seem to go for. Do bass go for those colors as well? Or?
Occasionally, but more often than not, a green pumpkin color like he's got right there, or a black and blue, you can't go wrong. I mean, there's so many. I was really completely amazed at how many different color variations that a crawfish has.
Oh, yes, there's
it is amazing.
They're endless.
Yeah, they're endless. And so I don't think that they're necessarily I don't think they're necessarily like concentrate on one particular color. If it looks like the profile that they're looking for, they don't care if it's
– Yeah, because the color varies according to the water they're in.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it does. So depending –
Time of year, moon phase, there's a lot of things that affect the color of a crawdad.
Absolutely. So then, you know, that has a lot to do with it. And sometimes just being – putting it right in their face too helps.
Oh, yeah.
You
know
what I mean?
I sure do.
So – But
bumping them on the nose, as we call it.
Yeah, yeah, that definitely helps for sure. But, you know, so we talked about the spinnerbait and then, of course, the jigs, the buzzbait. What else would you throw? So we're talking about crappie. You know, what do you throw for crappie this time of year? It probably doesn't.
I was throwing a Bobby Garland baby shad here a couple weeks
baby
ago.
Shad. On what kind of, like a 16th ounce?
A 16th ounce head.
Now, number two or number four hook?
Number four.
Yeah.
Now, as the water starts to cool, they'll start feeding on bigger baits. Mm-hmm. You can start being able to use like a 3-inch Bobby Garland. The water temperature was 64 last week and 66 in that ballpark. So it's getting close to where they'll start eating that and start suspending underneath them docks on sunny days.
Yeah. So once it starts getting colder, that's when you try to go a little bit bigger.
Correct.
And are you doing that just to catch the crappie or just to catch bigger crappie?
Just the crappie in
general. Just crappie in general. They'll all eat big.
Oh, yeah. Even in the wintertime, you know, we could throw a jerkbait and catch some big crappie.
Speaking of.
Or even small crappie.
I was throwing a Vision 110, I think, Friday. The water was 52 degrees on the Gasconade River. Okay, obviously I'm fishing for smallmouth.
Right.
All of a sudden I hook up and I reel this fish in. It's a 13-inch black crappie.
Wow.
And then I throw it back again. I'm jerking around. Bam, got another one. Another third. That's like a twin.
Right.
I caught three or four crappie right in a row all off that jerk.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. A jerkbait. You're talking, what are they, 6 inches long or?
Probably five and a half.
Five and a half. Yeah. Big bait. And most time you think of crappie, you think of just this little tiny. I was throwing a big old jerkbait.
We catch a ton of them on Lake Ozark in the wintertime. Just
hammering it.
It's amazing.
It's amazing how big a bait they'll eat, just like the bass. You know, the bass do the same thing. You got that Oliver Nye, you know.
Yeah, 10-inch swim bait.
Yeah, that's what he caught that big. Remember what he's talking about? We've had him on the radio. Well, it's getting close. We've had him a couple times. But anyway, hey, so are you playing? You got any big tournaments coming up? For too long or
nothing for a couple weeks, Tommy. I'm just gonna kind of relax and try to sit in a tree for a little bit.
That's good. That's what I'm gonna do in the morning.
Yeah,
to do that. It sounds like it's that time of year.
Oh, absolutely.
Everyone's gearing up for deer season but you know, you guys like you're bass fishing all year long, like bass. You know, the winter challenge.
Absolutely.
Are you gonna fish that winter challenge?
Yeah.
I figured.
Oh,
you would. Yeah, I'd say you'll do pretty good in it too. I hope you do. You always do. Every time I look the results, you're always up there.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, you do really really well. So, well, that's, you know, we're winding down to our second segment. We have a ton of fun on here, and it just flies by before you know it's done. You start getting in a conversation about bass fishing or whatever it is, you know, the jig or buzzbait. That buzzbait's so awesome, though. I'm going to have to check in on that.
I'll give you that one.
You will?
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Well, look at that. It's happy Halloween.
It's like Christmas.
Yeah, it's Christmas on October 31st. But that's the end of our segment here, and we'll be back here in a little bit. So,
and coming up, we'll be talking about streamer nymph fishing. I'm Jerry Cook, and this is Wild at Heart. Stick around.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart. This segment of our show is brought to you by Advanced Performance Shooting in Waynesville, offering classes on firearms use and safety. This segment, we're going to be talking about fly fishing using nymphing and streamers techniques. For those of you who aren't familiar with the nymphing technique, typically it's done with a longer rod.
All right, hang on a second here, Jerry.
Yes.
Tell us what a nymph is.
Okay, a nymph is typically a bug or a fly pattern that represents a bug that lives on the bottom of the stream primarily. sow bugs, scuds, if you're familiar with those.
So how big are they roughly?
Usually they're commonly they're a 14 to a 16 size hook. The pattern itself may be a quarter of an inch, a half an inch long.
Okay.
And typically nymphing, you're bouncing that pattern off the bottom of the stream, which is where this type of bug lives in the first place. And a lot of people don't understand, but a big fish will go after a small morsel like that, if you will. A lot of times you have to do what we call bump them on the nose with it, rainbow especially. Brown trout are a little more aggressive, much like the personality of a bass, and so they'll come out of their space and go chase it. Rainbow don't move too far out of their feeding lane, and they find a place where they're comfortable in the water column, and you as the fisherman have to find that same spot and then just drift it by them. But it's a common technique that's catching on more and more. It originated actually in Europe. It's called Czech nymphing because that's actually, I believe, where it started was in Czechoslovakia. And it's really caught on in this country. And it's a neat way to catch trout. I know my guide, Damon Spurgeon, is a heck of a nymph fisherman and really enjoys fishing that style. It's typically done with smaller weight rods, two weights, three weights. Some people will use four weights. I've probably sold more three weights for that technique than anything.
So Nathan and Tommy were talking about, you know, you guys were talking about the bait making the sound.
Yeah.
With everything.
So that attracts them.
Is there anything to that with fly fishing?
Not with nymphing, especially with streamers. Yeah, a little more so, but with nymph fishing, it's, yeah, that's top water though, Tommy, you know, for bass and bluegill.
Well, that's what this is top water.
Yeah. Yeah. But
that's what I think that's just what he's getting
but
at.
But you're not going to throw that with a fly rod. Yes.
No, but don't you have poppers with fly rods?
Yes, but they're typically considerably smaller, and typically you'll use those for largemouth bass in the summertime and bluegill.
Oh, so what you're saying is topwater is not a very good idea for trout.
No, not saying they won't hit topwater, but not poppers. Usually something that represents a bug of some sort. The patterns that are quite common are caddis patterns. Your most common around this area, blue wing olives, Adams dry flies, smaller elk hair caddis, although I've seen larger caddis patterns come off of the surface down on the Current River. A fly pattern that's a topwater pattern that's pretty common in warm weather on the currents are cream-colored midge. But those are all topwater patterns for trout. Now, the poppers you were referring to are generally used for warm water fishing for, again, largemouth and bluegill.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, the ones I was speaking of, because I just took a fly fisherman the other day, and they hammered smallmouth on it, so that's why I didn't know.
On a popper, topwater popper?
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. Smallmouth are one of the most aggressive fish you'll ever meet.
Oh, yeah. I'm in agreement with that, but I typically will use a woolly booger and go down into deeper holes mm-hmm. for them like that. Yeah. I've never fished for smallmouth with a topwater popper.
Hmm. Yeah, the fall in particular is awesome for smallmouth, you know, with just any kind of topwater in general. But, you know, I'm not a fly fisherman, and you know, to speak of. You know, I've got a fly rod, and you know the history on that. But I'm a bass fisherman. You know, I fish casting stuff and spinning stuff. So I've got to relate to these fly fishermen with using what I have, what I work with. Okay, I catch him on a buzzbait. How am I going to relate to him with a fly rod? So I've got to think of something. That's all I got. You know what I mean? They just give me the best. Try that, and it worked. So
yeah, and again, when I go after smallmouth on one of the rivers, I will use something that looks like a bait fish, a white woolly booger, a crawfish, even, you know. Trout and smallmouth bass both will go after a crawfish color. But as we were talking earlier, we fly fishermen typically go for the orangish color crawfish, even to the gray side. But again, that depends on the water that you're fishing. And
so do you ever have – okay, you was talking about your – you know, you fly fishermen, you know, tend to go for certain colors for this or that. And I'm – with no disrespect at all, is there any time there's guys like in the bass fishing world they hear or the crappie fishing world, and this is a famous quote that I hear so much, and I roll my eyes every time I hear it. Well, they just wasn't biting today because they threw the same thing they've thrown every single other time because they caught fish there before. You know, I've caught fish on this black buzzbait over this eddy with all these, you know, I'm just giving you examples. Or I go out there in this crappie hole and fish a black and chartreuse crappie jig with a chartreuse crappie nibbling on it. I catch them all the time. Well, today, they just wasn't biting. And I look at them and I say, well, did you eat today? I guarantee they ate today, too.
Oh, yeah.
We just couldn't figure them out. Even when I don't figure them out, I'll still tell you the same thing. I just didn't figure them out.
Well, you know? Sometimes they key in on color. Sometimes they key in on a pattern. But I think color is as important as anything.
Yeah.
And so, okay, maybe yesterday they went for white woolly boogers. Not far off the bottom. Maybe today it was olive woolly boogers, maybe a foot off the bottom. You've got to be in the right place in the water column, and it's got to be the color they're keying in on that day.
Yeah,
but you're right. They're eating regardless.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to eat. You just got to figure them out. So if you go out there one day and you don't catch any fish in particular, I don't care if it's trout, crappie, suckers, whatever. I don't care what it is. They're going to eat. They're going to feed just like anything else does. You know, deer does, turkey does.
Correct.
You know, box turtles, don't matter what you're talking about, they're going
to
eat.
And you know, with respect to trout, one day it may be scuds and something small like that, or midges. Maybe tomorrow they're saying, I want a juicier meal than that, and they'll go after something that looks like a bait fish.
Right. Well, it's just like Nathan was talking about a while ago. You don't necessarily use the same exact pattern every day. It can change from one day to the next, from hour to hour. I've seen it change like that.
Well, I have guys that come in my shop and say, what's hot down on the current river? And I say, well, with all due respect, you mean 15 minutes ago or right now, you know, because it does literally change that fast sometimes.
Right. No, for sure. I agree 100% because it changes. That's like I have clients that tell me, hey, give me a call whenever the fishing's really good, or when it's good, when they're really biting a buzzbait. And kind of give you a roundabout figure, you know, September and October, come on down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's all about all I can say, but you don't know. You know, you could go out there and it may be I've seen guys throw a cheap old Walmart buzzbait and it was something they'd never seen before and they would eat it. And then other times they won't.
There's something right there that there's a lot of truth to, and I say this all the time. A lot of times it's throwing something to them that they've not seen in a long time or never seen before.
That's a fact.
And sometimes that's a color, that's a pattern, or a combination of the two.
You can ask Nathan here about Lake of the Ozarks, and I know I've been talking about it a lot, and I know a lot of people there, including him and Jack and Marcus and all these guys. I mean, that's my crowd. That's my home lake, and if it's not on the river, that's where I'm at, is Lake of the Ozarks. But that has got to be the most pressured body of water in the state of Missouri, other than maybe the trout streams. I know they get hammered pretty good with the fly fishing.
Well, at times, more the trout parks than anything.
Trout parks, yeah. That's what I meant to say, I guess, the trout parks. I mean, that's one in particular way that you've got to change your tactics. If you're going and you got 1,500 guys all throwing the same fly, you know, or very similar to it, you almost have to throw something different if you want to.
There's certain patterns that will never fail you. It's a good place to start.
Dynamite.
Okay? It's a good place to start, but it doesn't mean that's where you're going to end up. And it's the same with nymph fishing. You might use an olive-colored scud today, but tomorrow it may be a pink-colored scud or a tan-colored flashback or a pregnant shrimp-type scud.
So is that pink color you're talking about, is that the bubblegum color? Is that the same color you're talking about?
Or
is
it different? It could be. Yeah, you could probably compare it to the bubble gum.
You know how you got yellow and you have chartreuse.
Right.
They're different. Yeah. They're different colors. Yeah. I didn't know because I know bubble gum is a popular color in the bass world.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And chartreuse and yellow can appear quite similar at times. Mm-hmm. Depends on the dye lot your materials came out of that you're tying the flies with. So. There's so many variables that go into this that it's almost endless. And so midges, which are a little bit different than scuds, are also used a great deal for the nymphing technique. There's just a lot of variables that go into that technique. But don't go away. We'll be right back with more on fly fishing in just 3 minutes. I'm Jerry Cook, and this is Wild at Heart.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3 FM. This segment of our show is brought to you by Colton Steakhouse and Grill in Rolla, where we know what's at stake. Also by Trout & Son, serving you with boats, motors, trailers, and accessories since 1972. Located on County Road 1000 in St. James. It's always fun at Trout & Son's.
Speaking of Trout & Son's, us here at Wild at Heart just want to give our support for the McMillan family, and just we know you got this, Kim, so we just want to let you know we're thinking about you.
Okay. Thanks for doing that, Tommy. We're going to be talking, we talked last segment about nymph fishing. I want to talk this segment about streamer fishing.
Oh, I love streamers.
Articulated streamers. Right? Yeah.
The fly fisherman that I took Thursday, Friday, I can't remember what day it was now. I lose track of my days. Anyway, I just took him. Met yesterday or day before. I said, "You got any streamers?" He's like, "Yeah." I was like, "Oh boy, you got articulated streamers?" No, I was like, "Dang it, don't have no articulated streamers." So we had to deal with just a regular streamer. I was thinking about you though, Jerry.
I'm sure you were, Tommy.
If you listen to this show and you don't know what an articulated streamer is, you need to go knock your head against a post or something because you haven't listened.
Back up a little bit, articulated streamers are jointed and have two hooks, and the ones that we really promote at our shop have a number 8 front and a number 6 stinger hook, and they're really great for going after big brown trout this time of year. The trout are spawning. They're aggressive, and don't invade their space because they're going to come after whatever does. And so a bait fish or anything that looks like a bait fish to them, they're going to suck that puppy right down, you know?
Yeah.
And smallmouth bass also like anything that looks like a bait fish.
For sure.
And so you can use anything from an articulated streamer, which the ones that we have tied for us are generally 3 to 3.5 inches long, to a number 6 or number 8 white woolly booger. But white is what I usually recommend for streamer fishing because, again, it looks like a shad or some type of bait fish and works extremely well down on the tailwaters of Tanicomo, especially when the shad kill is going on down there and they're coming over the dam. But in any other stream, even the Merrimack, now the shad there, the bait fish are typically smaller. So, a white woolly booger, a beadhead, or even a conehead if you're fishing deep holes. You can't go wrong fishing a streamer or an articulated streamer.
Now, are streamers, do you think that's a pattern that somebody or a fly fisherman can catch fish year-round, or do you think it's a seasonal pattern that is only good? You know, because here's one thing. Guys are so often, they're like, hey, a buzzbait's really good, or I can't wait for the fall so I can throw a buzzbait. Mm-hmm. I throw a buzzbait all year long.
Yeah.
All year long. It may not be prolific all year long, but I'm going to catch fish on it all year long, early and late, especially low light conditions. I didn't know if it was the same way for a streamer. Just kind of like a fluke is one of my big baits that I throw on, and that's why I went with the streamer, because when I get a fly fisherman that wants to imitate what how I've been catching, I've been catching on a white fluke. What do you got that's like a white fluke? And that's how I learned what a streamer was. Mm-hmm. From he goes, well, I got this. I was like, well, can you make it look like this? And I was showing, yeah, do that. And it worked.
Well, as you guys all know, I'm a streamer fisherman, okay? And
you're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. And I'll throw a streamer all year long.
White?
If I'm not, yeah.
Or does the color, I mean, do you vary the color?
White or olive, even black. Black works real mm-hmm. well. Damon has done well with a black Heisenberg down on the Merrimack on smallmouth. So color can vary. And size can vary, too, according to the water and the time of year and the temperature of the water. But I like to throw streamers pretty much year-round. If I'm not throwing a streamer, then I'm usually throwing scuds or nymphs, midges, okay? And I don't usually use a strike indicator or a bobber, as you guys would call it. But we fly fishermen, it's a strike indicator, okay?
Yeah.
I prefer to tight line or use an indicator leader. We have leaders that the butt end of that leader is colored, so you can pretty well detect when you've got a strike.
Right.
There are times when a strike indicator is necessary in order to maintain that height in the water column.
I got a question for you on these streamers, because I want you to educate me a little bit, because when I fish something similar on my spinning gear or my casting gear,
mm-hmm.
a fluke is what I'm talking about, I'll twitch it. I like to give it that erratic action. The
right.
more erratic, the better, because I think it triggers them bass.
Mm-hmm.
They see that thing twitching around, and it's sinking, and it twitches, and they just can't resist. Is that, the guy I seen the other day, it wasn't an erratic action. It was more of a – almost just like a it would glide. It would
a
glide.
Naturally swimming fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that how you is that how you typically do it?
Yeah.
Is there any way to emulate a dying bait fish with a streamer?
Well, you can, and that's stripping a couple of times pretty fast, and then just kind of let it sink a little bit, mm-hmm. and then strip it again a few times rather quickly, and then just kind of let it go and drift downstream, because we're typically dealing with running water, you know, in the Merrimack or the current. The 11-pointer, Jack's Fork. So you'll let it drift a little bit. You'll twitch it or strip it a little bit, and then just kind of let it rest and drift a little. And then you'll do that. I will do it personally for maybe 5 to 6, 8 feet, something like that. Pick it up, roll cast it out again. On a heavy streamer, I'll roll cast it. Nymphs and midges I'll overhead cast a lot, unless I don't have any room behind me, then I'll roll cast that. But if you're throwing big heavy streamers, it's what we call chuck and duck, you know. so you roll cast them in order to keep from getting your rod tip hit by the streamer and broken,
yeah.
or weakened, or catching yourself in the face or the ear one.
Yeah, for sure. So, obviously, we know you like streamers. What would be your top five? If you could just say, okay, I'm going to take these five flies, and I'm confident that I won't have any problem catching fish. Anytime.
I would take a white and an olive woolly booger. I would take a...
Okay, describe a woolly booger. What does it look
okay,
like?
Okay, it's got chenille wrapped around the hook, and then it's got... feathers, for lack of a better term, wrapped around that. It's got a tail on it that's marabou, and the hackle is wrapped from the beginning, or the eye of the hook or the bead, all the way back to where it starts, the hook starts to bend, and then it's got marabou behind it there. So it's a pretty simple pattern. Any beginning fly tire can tie that pattern. In fact, it's a good place for a beginning fly tire to start, because it's such a simple pattern to tie, and yet it's a fish getter.
A lot more simple than the words you just used a minute ago.
Okay.
I was like, "Dackle," and I'm thinking, that guy's always saying, hey, would you look at that? Look at this. I was thinking of that. Anyway.
But you're talking about the top five flies,
yeah.
And I would probably use a circus peanut in white or olive.
Is that the color or is that the name of it?
That's the name of it, a circus peanut.
They really have a fly called a circus peanut.
Yep, and one called a sex dungeon.
Oh, boy.
And they're quite
similar.
This
is P-rated here. G-rated here.
And they're both articulated streamers. They were developed by Kelly Gallup out on the West Coast. He's the guy that really started this articulated streamer craze out west, and it's just kind of come towards the Midwest. And I also like the Heisenberg, and typically that's a black-colored fly, but I just recently had some tied in white. It's a meatier-looking streamer, so it's a juicier meal to a trophy trout or mm-hmm. a smallmouth bass. But they've all got rubber legs on them, which gives them lifelike action. And we're even getting some woolly boogers tied with rubber legs on them now to give them that lifelike action.
Is it living rubber?
They're called silly legs and stuff like that from hairline dubbing.
Living rubber is really popular on the skirting material.
Yeah.
Like our bass.
Yeah. These are typically round legs. And a lot of times they're barred. They'll alternate between mm-hmm. black and white or other colors, crayfish colors, greens. Never-ending variation of colors.
You know, just to educate me a little bit more, because it's like this show is a constant education for Tommy Bench to learn a little bit more about trout fishing with a fly rod, because I'm very, very uneducated when it comes to fly rods. But I love fishing. You know, I love to learn more about just fish in general and how they act. Is trout fishing, in your opinion, is that something more of a visual, almost like a sight fishing kind of deal? Can you see those fish, or are you literally going off of the field? Because like when we're bass fishing, you can't see them fish 99% of the times except for in the springtime.
There are some rare trout fishermen who sight fish.
Almost exclusively sight fish?
Yeah, I'm not one of them. I just kind of know where they hang out. They'll be behind a rock or under some deadfall or something, or if there's a tree stump in the water, they're probably going to be behind that. But smallmouth and big trout will hang out behind a rock out of the current and then come out to catch that juicy meal they're looking for.
Yeah, that's it's always interesting to see other people's point of view on how they how they catch them, whether it be sight fishing or know they're there. But we're out of time again. It just flies by really quick when you really get deep in the conversation. But coming up in our next segment, we'll be talking about youth deer season. Stick around. You won't want to miss it. I'm Tommy Bench, and this is Wild at Heart.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart, your source of information about the Ozarks and a few points beyond. This segment is brought to you by Gar Truck and Equipment and the Outdoor Superstore, your Husqvarna dealer located on the North Outer Road in St. James. We're gearing up for youth deer season, which has just happened over this last weekend, and we're going to talk about the activity and what's been going on with the deer in general and how the youth season is going. A lot of us have had some youth that's harvested some deer. Nathan, you said your nephew had shot one.
Yeah, his first deer ever. His first time ever hunting. He had a blast.
Yeah. What is he, 6 years old?
Six years old, yes.
6 years old. Shot his first deer ever. Yep. That's awesome. You know, every year this subject comes up this time of year. My daughter's 15 years old. Well, she's 14. She'll be 15 November 12th, which is basically our firearms season when it opens that weekend. She has still not ever shot a deer, but she's had her opportunity. She'll say she hasn't. She'll sit there and tell you she hasn't, but she has. But I'll tell you what it is in Pulaski County, we was the first county. That's where I live, Pulaski County. It was like one of the first original counties that initiated that antler restriction, the four-point antler restriction. This has been like 10 years ago. So what that did is, we told you about the antler restriction in one of our other episodes. And what it is the deer's got to have at least four scoreable points on one side. And it can be completely missing on the other side. But anyway, youth season, it doesn't matter. But see, as a child, I don't think it just registered that way, because I'd come home when she was 6 or 7 years old, and she said, "Dad, you see anything?" "Yeah, yeah." "Well, what'd you see?" And I said, "Oh, just some small bucks." Why didn't you shoot them?" "Hey, it wasn't big enough."
Right, right.
That was stuck in her head her whole life. So going on 7, 8, 9, you know, she started going youth hunting whenever she felt comfortable doing. I've never been the type to push my kids into doing anything. When she's comfortable, she did. So we're out there in this little basket rack, 4 or 6 pointer walks by, and I was like, "Caitlin, there you go. There you go. You ready? You're going to shoot him?" She goes like, "No, I'll wait for something bigger, Dad. That's not big enough." Are you kidding me? Chance of a lifetime right here. I mean, like a full rack, a 6 pointer, just a little basket rack, but it's still a great deer for a kid's first deer. Passed it up. Then we seen a couple does maybe the next year or the next day. "Caitlin, there's some deer right there. Take it if you want." "No, Dad, I'll wait for a buck. I want to shoot me a buck." "Dad, coming." So she passed up on all these deer year after year. Okay, so now fast forward to this year. I've got my gun. It's a 6.8 millimeter is what it is. It's an AR. And I bought this new scope for it for her. And I was like, "You ready to go this year? What do you want to shoot?" She goes, "Anything that walks out." Atta girl. She learned her lesson.
She's bound determined this year.
She's bound determined. She said, "Anything that walks out, it's brown, it's down." I said, "That's my girl right there." And she had a shot. I mean, a close shot, like a chip shot. I mean, she had smoked it. This is like a 20-yard shot. And she goes, "Dad, I'm on." I said, "You can't shoot. You can't shoot." There was a house way in the background, and the chances of her shooting that house is about 0.0001% because of all the hills and hollers. But there's always a possibility of it hitting a rock, deflecting. I'm one of them guys. Unless I'm 100% sure, I will not take the shot, and I will not let my child take a shot. And I told her afterwards, I said, "Caitlin, if something would happen," she said, "Dad, there's no way I could have hit anything over there. I wasn't even close." It's not the point. The point is you're in that direction. I don't care if there was a cow back there. You're mm-hmm. not going to shoot that direction. It's not going to happen. She said, "Well, I had that deer did." I said, "I know you did, but that's trust me, you're going to thank me later in life when you know something happens. You would have had to live the rest of your life regretting if something that 0.001% happened, you know, rather than just not taking a shot at a deer." So, you know, that's something else I try to teach these kids and just to any kid. And a lot of adults do is just the safety behind it, because there's so many things that could happen that, you know, take the enjoyment. All of a sudden it goes from something being really fun to something that's tragic. But anyway, that happened. She didn't shoot at that deer. And then it wasn't 10 minutes later, right before dark, another one walked out, turned broadside. And this was just Sunday, so 3 days ago. And she shot that deer. And we couldn't find it. It ran in the weeds, and we looked and looked and looked, and I don't know if we jumped it up or what, so bless her heart. Maybe she'll get it the second half. Well, so what have you guys been – anyone else hear anything about some other use killing any deer? Any deer hunting going on your way, Jerry?
Well, I've heard use? Of a number of deer being harvested by youth, and some nice ones at that. But
do you remember the gentleman we had on the show a few weeks ago, Ron Bowling with Hollow Horn?
Yes, I do.
His son, JD, the one he kept calling his little boy, and he said, well, he's not so little anymore. Mm-hmm. He's 13, 14, whatever he is. He shot a nice buck. No, I mean, I'm not saying it's just a giant buck, but you got to remember, these are kids, you know?
With a gun or a bow?
With a gun.
Okay.
Yeah, it's firearms. But, hey, I'll tell you an amazing story. My buddy Justin Travis, he's... Like I said, him and Jack are two of them, pretty much my two closest friends. And his daughter, speaking of you, Nathan, you were talking about your nephew, she is just 6. I think she's 6, too. 5 or 6. She's young. I was like, Justin, are you sure? You know, she's pretty young. She wanted to go. So he got her a gun, got her all set up, and she's all excited. Well, she's one of them. She's like her mom is. She'll just tell you how it is, you know. And she just flat out said, I don't want to shoot this gun. So Justin's broken heart. He's like, dang, what am I going to do now? I bought this tag, and she's ready to go. She's like, but I could shoot that crossbow, Dad. He goes, you want to shoot the crossbow? And she's like, yeah. So he took her out there and practiced with it. She shot around. They went opening weekend, and sure enough, she had a deer come in. First time she's ever been hunting in her life. Not with a gun, but with a crossbow. I know it's a crossbow, but people think crossbows are that easy. They're not as easy as what you think. No. You still got to be steady. You still got to hold it. And she smoked a doe. She got her first deer, first time she ever went with that crossbow.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. Justin, you know, of course, he's probably going to he don't care. He's a softie, you know. That's his only child, and that's his whole world is Emily. And he said, I just broke down. He couldn't handle it. You know, he was so emotional because she shot her first deer all on her own with that crossbow. So that's the story of the for me. That's my story of the youth season.
That's pretty amazing. So
that's
really
an awesome story. And she was so excited. Of course, they did all the let's wait to track it down. And she shot a little bit far back, but dadgum, she's 6 years old, you know, with a crossbow. So it was pretty amazing. She got her first deer. I'm pretty excited for her.
She'll be hooked for life now.
She will. Yeah, she will. And her dad's an avid hunter, and we all go a lot, you know. And so, yeah, she's hooked for life now. She got her deer, her first ever. And it's just pretty cool to see kids, you know, their excitement. Just like Caitlin Miles when she shot that. She's 14. She was so excited. She was jumping up and down. She said, I got to go tell Grandma. I got to go. I'll be right back. I was like, well, calm down, you know. Just kind of calm down. So, but yeah, it's youth hunting is something special. I look at youth hunting almost like anything with youth. You know, as much as we can get our youth involved in the outdoors, and I speak of this a lot, and I won't stop speaking of it, but our kids are so – the society that we live in today, they've got electronics literally thrown in their face.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hey, you got to have this. You got to have a smartphone. You got to have an iPad. You got to have a computer. You got to have Wi-Fi. You got to have – everything evolves around – technology. And there's nothing wrong with that, because in a way it's helped a lot of things. It's helped our world in general for the most part, but I just like to see them get back to the things that we enjoyed most when we were kids, you know, getting outside and playing and not even caring, not even knowing what a cell phone was back in for different, you know, different times for different of us. But to me, back in the 80s, you know, or the 90s or the 70s or 60s, whatever. But, you know, we didn't even know what that stuff was. And, you know, I was talking to my client yesterday about how much things have changed. And his mom was like 90 years old, and it just blows her mind the things that we can do now. You know, so anyway, my point of it is, I'm getting outside. My point of it is seeing them kids get outside and just play or fish or do the things that a lot of kids aren't doing nowadays. You know, they're going away from kids getting outside and doing those kind of things. It's really good to see. So I encourage anyone to get a kid outside, take a kid hunting, take a kid fishing, anything you can do to try to get them hooked on it, give them a good experience doing it. That's amazing. So I applaud anyone that does that.
I think a lot of kids today, when they get home from school, they're on their computer or playing video games or something. And I know this goes back a ways, but we didn't have those when I was a kid. Yeah. I'd come home from school, dump the books, pick up my fly rod, head for a pond at the back of our subdivision, and spend the rest of my afternoon fly fishing for bluegill.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we lived on an old gravel road, so we always rode our bikes down to the creek, you know, and done that. Or not. It's not like I'm not going to try to portray my life like that's all I did was fish in the creek. We went out and had forts in the woods and had tree houses and would make up stuff. And, yep, you know, we'd see a big giant boulder there and we'd pretend it was a big giant turtle from the zoo, you know, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
All kinds of stuff, you know, just have an imagination and just be a kid instead of having our face stuck in a – well, we didn't have that option, you know, but – you know, things were just so much better back then, I think. And it's funny because everyone's worried about things nowadays, about don't let them do this, this, and that. Think about the things we did as kids when we survived. Drank straight out of the garden hose, or you know what I mean? It's just, I always tell people, I said, I don't get sick very often because I'm not as self-conscious. Like, everyone's always like, I got to go to the doctor, got to take this, got to take that. And I'm always like, oh, I dropped my food. And just, you know, it'll be all right. So. Anyway, so what's that, John?
I was just going to say the five-second rule there.
Five-second rule, sometimes more if it's something really good.
Oh, yeah. Question there.
Yeah. There's definitely a five-second rule for me, and I think it's just built up my immune system. I'm so used to just all the germs going through my body that it's just it can tolerate it.
Yeah.
So when I finally do get a virus, it just kicks it in the butt, you know, and it's gone. So I don't get sick very often. But, we're going to talk about we're talking about youth season here and all the kids and getting outdoors. And this next segment, we're going to talk about some of the stream fishing. Jerry, have you been on any streams here recently?
Not recently. I wish I could say I had. But, of course, I get reports virtually daily from customers who have been on the streams.
So you hear about it, know what's going on.
Yeah, so I kind of keep up with it that way. And, of course, I talk to some of the guides on other rivers and so on. My old buddy Chris Raines is up in Michigan steelhead guiding now, and instead of enjoying the warm climate in Belize.
Let's talk about some of this here in just a minute. We'll be right back in just 3 minutes. I'm Tommy Benson. This is Wild at Heart.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back. I'm Tommy Bench, and you're listening to Wild at Heart. Now we're talking about local stream fishing around the Ozarks. I was just on the Gasconade yesterday, and the water temperature was surprisingly warmer than it was just a few days before. You know, that's the thing about the Ozarks that we all know. If you lived here any amount of time, you know, if you don't like the weather, just wait a little bit. You
5 minutes and it'll change.
It'll change. And you never can predict when it'll flip-flop again. So just...
I gotta ask you a question there, Tommy. I emailed you sometime this week. I texted you some question. I forget what it was, but you told me you were on the river, and it was foggy, and it was cold, and it was rainy. I was wondering how you were doing that.
Yeah,
day.
You commented about an intro about reorganizing an intro or something like that.
How was the fishing that day?
The fishing was all right. It was pretty good.
Really?
It wasn't that bad, believe it or not. I didn't think it was going to be because there was a huge front that just moved in. And usually them big cold fronts that move in, they just kind of shut down. It's hard to figure them out. But surprisingly, that was the day I was telling you they were catching them on a popper. That was the day. It was Thursday. No, it was a Friday. Was it Thursday or Friday? Either way, whatever it was nasty, cold,
windy.
Oh, it was miserable. And we're out there all bundled up, and wind was ripping. That was the same day I was catching all them crappie on that jerkbait.
Seems like the colder and nastier the weather, the better they bite.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is about that, but something about it.
That's some of my favorite time to fish, too.
Oh,
really.
Absolutely.
For several reasons. One, there's fewer people on the river.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely fewer people. And if you can tolerate that weather, you know what? My favorite time of the year to fish is the wintertime. And people...
Same here.
I'm not going to give away too much on it, but you guys know how I feel about the wintertime. That's usually when I catch my biggest fish, and it's just a fun time. People just don't want to tolerate the cold. But if you can tolerate the cold or just wait for a decent day to come along, but the water temperature's cold, those fish are pretty predictable if you know anything about them. But, you know, that day that we were talking, the water temperature was down to... 52 degrees. I think it got down to 51 or 52 degrees on the river, surface temp. But then, and it dropped from 56 or so, I think is what it dropped down to. From that morning, it dropped down like 4 degrees or 5. Well, then fast forward just a couple days later, I had another trip, and the cold front had moved through, and now we're having 58 degree lows and 72 degree highs. That water had jumped up to almost 70 degrees. It was 68 degrees. No, I don't want to say that wrong. It was huge. It was maybe 64. 64. It went from 52 to 64. That is unbelievable.
12 degrees a ton.
That's a ton when you're talking about water temperature change. But that was in a few days. And, of course, that's what we're talking about. The river fluctuates so much because of how shallow it is. You know, average, it's 4 or 6 foot. You know, you have some deep holes that are 12 or 14 foot deep. But all in all, you got an average of about 4 or 5 foot depth.
Well, that's one advantage of fishing rivers like the Current, the Jack's Fork, the 11 Point, Mill Creek, and cold water streams that are spring fed, the water temperature stays fairly constant.
Right. No, I agree.
And in the wintertime, the water temperature is actually warmer than the air temperature. So
for
if you're
sure.
a wade fisherman, you know, your feet and legs will actually be warmer than your body that's out of the water. And actually, I've been out on the river when it's snowing before and was comfortable in catching fish. And guess what? There wasn't anybody else out there.
Yeah, you didn't have to fight with a bunch of other people to do
right,
it.
There was no competition for what I was throwing.
One of my best days fishing, I was at Lake of the Ozarks, and it was probably about 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. I can't remember. And there was an ice storm moving in, and we were out there fishing, catching just ginormous crappie. And it was one after another. And it was getting so bad it couldn't stand up on the front of the boat. It was so slick, but we kept on going.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, it came to the point, it's like, we got to go. We're never going to be able to get out of here.
But and, see, that's the difference in boat fishing and wade fishing in one of the cold water streams, though.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. I've got some spots that people are like, whoa, you know, how is you? I don't know how you can catch fish in the wintertime. I said, man, the colder the better, because them fish are so predictable. When it gets cold, and right now is the time I hate to go fishing. I won't lie. November is my worst month on the river, because them fish in October, they're just gorging on bait fish. So like we were talking about earlier, buzz baits and bait fish patterns, flukes, whatever it is, they're just feeding heavily on bait fish.
And streamers for wee fly
fish. And articulated streamers. But as soon as they're done gorging, their bellies are full, they're fat, they're ready. They know what's coming. Like, hey, I'm going to my wintering hole, and if I don't eat for a few days, we talked about they eat every day, but you know, in this instance, they know that they got a little bit to travel. They're going to go to the wintering hole, and now they're lethargic. Instead of them feeding heavily, they know that water is going to get cold. They're anticipating the fact that they're not going to be moving around, expending a lot of energy anymore.
Right.
But you get a big meal in front of them, and they're all schooled up. I promise you, I've had better days in the wintertime. The matter of fact, the only time I've ever caught three smallmouth in one cast was in the dead of the winter, in January, February, on a jerkbait, on a perfect 10, a Strike King perfect 10 jerkbait.
As we've discussed on here before, it's their way of thinking, if you will, is the least amount of energy expended for the most number of calories consumed.
Oh, for sure. I agree. And that's why I was going to ask you, when it comes to fly fishing, that's probably why I never got real big into fly fishing, because I've got a big bait, big fish mentality. I'm always thinking, throw something big. Instead of catching, we've all been there. If you fish for any amount of time, you've been to the point to where you just want to catch fish. Well, after a while, it gets to where I got to the point to where I can catch fish. I can catch a bunch of fish if I want. I'd rather catch 4 or 5 or 6 or 8 big fish than 30 12-inchers or 15-inchers.
But, you know, you can throw big bait, if you will, as you call it, on a fly rod. My buddy Todd Meyer from up at Columbia, who we've had on the program before, throws 12-inch streamers with a 12-weight fly
and
rod.
And I'm learning that. But my idea of a fly fisherman, and most people's assumption, if you ask anyone that is not a fly fisherman, they're taking something little bitty that you could literally blow out of your hand, and it's gone.
And those are typically the purest fly fishermen, if you will.
They throw the smaller stuff.
Throwing dry flies on a very limber rod and so on. And that's how a lot of people think of fly fishing.
They do.
There's a lot more to the game than that.
Well, it's just like my buzzbait. We were talking about buzzbaits earlier. I keep going and pushing and pushing and pushing my boundaries. You know, starting off as a kid, I would throw – it's ingrained. You know, you're a smallmouth river fisherman or stream fisherman. You throw light tackle, 4 or 6-pound line. Well, me and my brother would push and we'd be like, hey, let's go 8. You know, and like, well, we're catching fish. Let's go up. Let's go 10. Still catch fish. Let's go 12. And we just kept going and kept going and kept going to where now a fluorocarbon come out, and that's what I still use to this day. I use 20-pound fluoro in the river. That's what I throw my jigs on.
I do the same thing.
That's what I use. And those fish don't even care about it. I'll catch them all day long. And that's why you'll see them videos, you know, like in the tournaments I fish. I pulled out a 4-pound small in about 7.5 seconds. But, you know, it's like, yeah, well, you're losing a lot of the fight of it. But at that point, I just want to get to the fish. I just want to see the fish and get it out.
That's the difference between recreational and tournament, too.
That's exactly. Recreational and tournament, because when you're tournament fishing, you got to get that fish in. But what's that old saying, Mel Bill tell you?
Get it in the boat.
Get it in the boat. Yeah. I see so many guys on a guide trip, and they're fighting that fish. And they're just, and I'm like, that's like a 3-pounder. I'm like, and finally, I'm just like, get it in the boat. Get it in the boat. You can mess around with it when you get it in the boat. Let me get a picture.
Play with it in the boat.
Yeah, play with it in the boat. Then you can mess around with it. And I've seen – Bill was one of them. I've seen Bill lose a fish, and it wasn't his fault. I hope you don't listen to this one. He'll get me on this one. I heard you talking about me again. But, no, he – that was a big fish he had too, Milo. But anyway, I was just getting to this time of month. It's hard for the river guys. I mean – if somebody's figured out, they figured out something might happen. But November, when they're transitioning from that really big feeding frenzy over to their wintering hole, that is the hardest time to catch them, because you're catching them in between. They've already really fed, and so it's not like they're really hungry. They've got a goal. They're getting their wintering hole. But once they get to that winter hole and the cold sets in, when you got like 40, you know, the water's in the 40s, Oh, it's game on. You find them fish, and you
can. That's
when
it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's when it's a blast.
You see, that, and what you're talking about there pertains to smallmouth, but brown trout, they're in spawning mode right now, so they're aggressive, and you just don't invade their space, if you will. So that's when you're, you know, throwing big bait fish type streamers to them and so on to entice vicious strikes from big browns.
Right.
Now, rainbows, not quite so much, but browns this time of year are really a good species to go after.
And you said the browns are highly, are more often than not more sought after than the rainbow. So, I mean, if you're talking about a trout fisherman, they would be more inclined to say, I'd rather catch a brown trout than a rainbow.
Well, yeah, because they put up a bigger fight than a rainbow.
It's kind of like a smallmouth. Yeah. Ain't no different than a smallmouth. If you're into catching a smallmouth, and then all of a sudden you catch a largemouth around the same water, you just think you got a little one. Oh, I got a little one on there. And it's like a 16-inch largemouth, but it just you don't even really fight, you know. But the smallmouth, they're just so full of.
Well, in a cold water stream, you know, to me, you're fighting as fish as a smallie.
Yeah.
Then you go to the brown trout, and then the lightweight's the rainbow.
Yeah, yeah. They fight the least as far as those three goes. Yeah, yeah, but, you know, that's just something that that we love, you know. Love to go after them fish and figure them out. That's one thing that I pride myself on. Nathan does as well, and he's really good at it. He'll be humble and tell you he's not, but he fishes all year, just like I do, you know, a lot of guys do. But, you know, trying to figure them out from month to month to month when it's tough, you know, when no one else can figure them out. Just like a couple weeks ago, whenever they were first talking about a possible turnover in the lake, I was catching around some isolated wood, and then my buddy Jack made a comment about me catching him there and this. And I was like, I don't know. I didn't know. But anyway, you know, we're running out of time again. We flew by the segment again, and it was fun. It was a good show, and I had a blast. So Wild at Heart is heard every Wednesday afternoon from 4 to 6 and Sunday mornings from 8 to 10. The show is produced in the studios of ESPN 107.3 in Raleigh and engineered by John Francis. We'd like to thank our guests today, Nathan Oliver and Bass and Bob Bultman. Don't forget, you can always listen to a podcast of this show. Just go to our website at ESPN1073.com, click Programming, and Wild at Heart. I'm Tommy Bench.
And I'm Jerry Cook.
Thanks for joining us.